Yeah, good afternoon. It's Thursday, March, or May, May 2nd, 2024. We'll call the meeting to order. Please silence all cell phones. The time is 1:40 p.m. I'm joined by Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Keel, Merrick, and myself, Senator Olson. Senator Co-Chair Hoffman is out, and Co-Chair Stedman is busy meeting with the governor at this time. We'd like to go ahead and continue on with this afternoon's Senate Bill 217, Rail Belt Transmission System by the Governor. Senator Diesel, would you mind coming on up with Angela Rodell to finish your presentation on this morning?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Kathy Giesel. I'm the Senator for Senate District E, Anchorage and Whittier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Angela Rodell, staff to Senator Giesel.
Okay, if you'd like to continue on, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to sort of start with where we wrapped up. There were some questions about Section 18, these first two pieces on the governance structure. And one of the things I wanted to clarify for the committee is that the governance structure was amended in the Senate Resources Committee. And when the original governance structure was established, it was designed to mimic or mirror the Bradley Lake Management Committee model, which is that there would be a consortium of asset owners that would collectively manage as fiduciaries the assets. That's similar to Bradley Lake. They have different voting rules based on the fiduciary level of the action that needs to be taken. And each of the boards of the respective utilities and AEA have delegated to the CEOs the ability to take the fiduciary action required and negotiate that for the Bradley Lake assets on behalf of the utility and the board. When we amended this in Senate Resources, we created three voters who do not have that same fiduciary responsibility and do not have that same asset owner responsibility. And they haven't set out the voting rules. I do know that I believe we have Mr. Thayer online who can also speak to how this works in practice. So I just wanted to clarify that for the record. I think when we then had the powers and duties that were listed in 710, those were listed with an eye towards a governance structure that is this fiduciary management committee, and were not subsequently amended as well to sort of mirror up to the governance structure. So I think that we need to go back and do some work. I want to do a little more research and be able to get something in writing to the committee on that front.
Okay. We have a question by Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you. I guess my question might be for Mr. Thayer in terms of the voting requirements for it was C, D, and E. And I guess my question is actually for C and D. Can we still keep them on there and just not have them be voting members so that voice is still heard upon this organization?
Mr. Thayer, are you on, sir? Did you want to comment on it while we're waiting for CB's coming on?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilson, through the chair, I can answer that question for you. As long as they are not voting members, they can continue to maintain seats and have that voice at the table.
Thank you.
Follow-up, Senator Wilson?
Oh, thank you.
Hey, I am online now.
Mr. Thayer, did you hear the question?
Or Mr. Chair, yes, I did. I apologize. I was being unmuted as the conversation was taking place. Ms. Rodell is correct. They can be members, just non-voting members, according to our legal counsel, or it could trigger our bonds being in default by giving fiduciary responsibility to people that were not in the original loan agreement.
Okay. Any follow-up to the questions, Senator Wilson?
No, thank
you. Ms. Rodell, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 18 continued. So we create the revenue mechanism. This is subject to the approval of the RCA. This is that cost recovery, open access transmission tariff that we talk about. The important things on this is that this methodology must pool and allocate transmission system costs. So this is getting rid of the pancaking that you have heard about, some of the wheeling issues. The second thing that this does, it accounts for backbone ancillary services. So to be very clear, this will take into account the pieces that support the backbone transmission. It also must take into account congestion. And thirdly, it has to take into account disruptions resulting from the isolation of one geographical area. So whether it's Fairbanks or Homer, if there's an islanding or isolation issue, that has to get rectified through this cost recovery mechanism that will be approved by the RCA.
Okay.
730 requires the RTO to engage in integrated transmission planning at least every 10 years. This plan must set clear goals and use a whole system approach and take into consideration technological advancements, load growth, fuel supply, among others, and it is to be published on the AEA website. I believe, and Mr. Thayer may be able to speak a little bit to this as well, that AEA and the utilities have actually already begun the process of doing some transmission planning and capital planning and will be ready to hit the ground quickly. 740 requires the RTO to identify existing transmission assets by July 1, 2025, and that the utilities will transfer management of those assets to the RTO by July 1, 2026. So this is to allow for the smooth transfer of identification and transfer of management. Then finally, in 750, we define the backbone transmission system as those assets of the interconnected electric energy transmission network that serves the rail belt, which we've identified as that geographical area. It does not include, and I think this is a really important point because this has raised some questions as well, it does not include assets that would be considered distribution or radial facilities as defined by FERC, the federal FERC. I'm just going to say FERC. And I want to be clear on that FERC has done a tremendous amount of work at the federal level to define distribution facilities and radial facilities. And so this allows the RCA to incorporate that idea into this definition. Commission, again, is the RCA, and the rail belt is the range from Kenai Peninsula to interior Alaska connected by a common transmission system, backbone.
Okay. Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you. If we go back actually two slides at the end, we're a little too fast and transitioning here. We asked that question where we ended the meeting this morning on the work of must be performed and subject to the terms and conditions of the existing bargaining agreement. I guess my question is that language really needed? Because if you have a contract, you're going to do the work according to the agreement. But is this to which bargaining unit? Because if this is the transmission organization doing the work or hiring the work, is it the agreements of which you're in the sub, if you're in the category of MEA or Chugiak or Golden Valley, is that the intent? I'm just trying to understand how this would work.
Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilson, the operative word on line 8 is existing. The utilities have existing contracts. AEA has existing contractors that have worked for them. And so you point out justly that do we need to be this specific? It was requested. It's belt and suspenders that we were happy to include.
I guess. Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is then, because it's the transmission organization that is doing the lines and the maintenance, and if the project overlaps two areas, then they have to manage two existing bargaining agreements, or could they just go ahead and just contract the work out to be done because they already, if the contractor already has a bargaining agreement, it would already be in staff, they would have to follow that. So I'm just a little confused in terms of if there's a project that's going across the lines and there's different existing bargaining agreements, do they have to do that existing bargaining agreement across the entire line where there may not be one already existed? Or do they have to, it just seems confusing.
Ms. Riddell.
Mr. Chairman, I understand Senator Wilson's question. Could we please ask Curtis Thayer to respond? He could do that credibly.
Mr. Thayer, are you on, sir?
Yeah, for the record, it's Curtis Thayer, the Executive Director of Alaska Energy Authority. To the chair, to that point, we do similar work, or we have a similar issue that has arisen in the fact of the Alaska Intertie, which AEA owns, and we have an agreement with both MEA and with Golden Valley Electric to manage different parts of that line and do maintenance, operation and maintenance on those lines. And we do work within those bargaining units that they have between each of those utilities. If that answers your question with a...
Senator Wilson.
Okay. I guess then if you already do that, is the language needed?
Through the chair, I think that's more of the belts and suspenders of it's a practice that we do now. And I think it was just something that they just wanted to, we wanted to confirm that we would continue doing it under the RTO.
Thank you.
Follow-up, Senator Wilson. No. Senator Bishop.
Yeah, I haven't read the terms and conditions of the individual CBAs, but I do know that there are agreements. I don't know if they're written or handshake, but that the utilities share crews up and down the line in cases of outages and emergencies. So Fairbanks, some parts of our interior was out of power, and crews from down south came up and leaned into the problem and with the main goal of getting power back to the homes. So,
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we do appreciate those linemen that come from other jurisdictions to help out across the state. Those are always appreciative and thankful for that work that they do. My next question is actually on the revenue mechanism on page 12. It's the item of C in terms of cost recovery methodology for when an installation is isolated. How is that methodology normally calculated from the RCA, I guess, would be the ones doing this? Would it be a reduction in the tariff tax that's being assessed? Would it be raising the rates temporarily? I'm just wondering how the cost recovery methodology is normally conducted.
Mr. Bell.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I will have to get back to you on how it works today. On any of this, the way that this new mechanism is designed is to take all the fixed costs and spread them across without regard to load. In other words, how much any one person or utility is using the transmission system. And so we want to make sure, though, that if there are significant outages or activities that are preventing that transmission from moving from one place to another, that the costs associated with that get incorporated into the tariff request before the RCA. We'll have to get back to you on how it works today.
Senator Wilson. I'm sorry, Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, you know, the Swan Lake fire might be a good example of a time when there was an isolation, there was a break. Perhaps Mr. Thayer would be able to offer some information about how it worked during that period.
Mr. Thayer, are you on, sir?
Yes, for the record, Curtis Thayer with Alaska Energy Authority. When we had the Swan Lake fire, the Swan Lake line, or the SQ line as we call it, was owned by Homer Electric. And it did not serve any Homer customers, it only served the northern utilities. And when that became islanded due to the fire, which it was out for 4 months, we had an issue in the sense that the northern utilities had to find additional supply, and it cost them roughly about $12 million in additional natural gas costs that was borne by those customers. But the Bradley Power, Homer still had access to Bradley Power, and it's just that the water available to the northern utilities on their percentage wasn't being used. Once that line was back in service, they were able to draw down maybe at a greater rate, but use that same amount of power that they were allocated. So even though they were islanded, they still had access to that power once the line was up. We did, during that fire, run into a point where we were spilling water briefly for a couple of days, which you never want to do with a hydro project. When the dam was at full capacity, Homer couldn't really take any more, and the rest was being in reserve or on hold for that. But after 4 months, it was back in service, and it was not a problem. And the Northern Utilities were able to get the water that they were owed over the next course of the next several months.
Bob, Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Thayer. Just wondering then, the $12 million that you mentioned that those other utilities paid, how was that? Who paid that in the end? I mean, was the power utilization made up the difference, and so the ratepayer never had to pay that additional money, and there was no loss to the utilities during that 4 months?
Mr. Thayer.
Through the chair, those initial costs were passed on to the ratepayer for the additional cost of that natural gas during that time. But as that power from Bradley Power, more power is available to them, they didn't use as much natural gas in the outlying months after the repair was done. So I would probably have to double check with the individual utilities, but there was some sort of leveling at that point because, again, they never lost the ability to use that water because we never spilt that much water where they couldn't use it. It just took them – it just during that 4 months, there was additional cost and increase to consumers.
Follow-up, Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess then let's go the reverse option. Let's say if power can only go one way on those transmission lines without other lines being diverted so that they could have that sort of redundancy and maybe able to get cheaper power from a Chugiak, the wind farm, for example. Let's say Chugiak is doing fine, the battery storage is working okay, and they wanted to wheel the other way, but they couldn't due to the down out during these upgrades being islanded. How would a utility make up that cost?
Mr. Thayer.
Through the chair, I would like to defer to the individual utilities because they have individual contracts with each other and arrangements for the production of power. For example, Fairbanks or Golden Valley purchases power here in South Central Alaska. They ship it across the intertie. The intertie saves the Fairbanks consumers $37 million a year, the state ownership of that line. And then that allows them cheaper power. And so, like, for example, where Golden Valley is getting their power, they might have arrangements with MEA or with Chugiak on moving power up that line and the same thing. So there are some arrangements within the utilities, and I do not know them all in what they are. But this kind of goes back fundamentally back to the need for the transmission upgrades and the second line off the Kenai so we can move power up and down and have a backup and around and go a different route if we need to and if we have problems on the line. But I would have to, like I said, I would like to defer to the utilities on their individual arrangements on power.
Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thank you. And I guess that's my overall question that we ended, Mr. Chair, just in terms of, I think on the same page, on page 12, 29, railroad utility shall pass the commission approved transmission costs directly, transparently to the utility's customers. And just trying to get an understanding of what will the total costs or projected costs could be for ratepayers under this bill. Because I see a lot of just sort of indirect or direct costs or just with the upgrades and tariffs and other items that are being charged or could be charged in this bill, just trying to understand, will, you know, my constituents' rates go up $5, $100, or just 20 cents a month? And it's just be helpful to get a clear picture of what the ratepayers might be end up paying with this piece of legislation.
So do you want that question to go to Mr. Thayer?
Just like I said, just in general, I'm not sure who the best person to get that information, but it would just be helpful to have that information before hopefully passing this piece of legislation.
Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilson, the Alaska Center for Energy and Power has an economist on staff who has made some estimates. They were going to refine those. But one thing is certain. Without an upgrade to the transmission line and this kind of organization managing our transmission lines, we will certainly have increased costs because there is limited access. We will be unable to continue to get more renewables integrated into our system so that so that we can displace natural gas, using that for heat instead. We can continue to do the same thing that we're doing right now, and costs will certainly rise. We believe this bill contains the mechanism for the future to stabilize the costs and make more efficient and ultimately less costly energy.
Senator Giesel, does that assume we have we leave net metering in there?
Net metering, Mr. Chairman, is kind of a side issue in that it will reflect an individual who decides to put solar panels on their roof. And so that's actually not part of the transmission backbone directly.
I wholeheartedly agree with the comments that Senator Giesel made, Mr. Chairman. I think that for a time period, we're going to have an increase, but then hopefully at a plateau over a period of time. I just would like to tell folks this is expect an increase there, but then your rates will be stable over the long term, which would be better for many families in the state.
Go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are now on the last page of my presentation, which is actually the final implementation provisions of the bill. So sections 19 through 24 help implement all the provisions. Section 19 sets the directive for Alaska Energy Authority and the RCA to adopt the necessary regulations to implement the changes that have happened. Section 20 requires the Alaska Energy Authority to immediately begin an initial transmission plan and capital improvement program. Section 21 allows any current member of the RCA to continue to serve until their term expires and a replacement has been nominated and qualified. Section 22 provides for the transition of the new AEA board and allows for staggered terms of the public members, with 2 members serving 1 year, 2 members serving 2 years, and 2 members serving 3 years. Section 23 provides that 19 and 20 will take effect immediately, and Section 24 is the effective date of July 1st, 2024, for all other sections.
I want to welcome Senator Stedman back to the table. We're on our last slide.
Perfect timing.
Any further questions by members of the committee for Ms. Rodell or the bill sponsor, Senator Giesel? Any closing comments, Senator Giesel?
Only to thank the committee for hearing the bill. Myself and my staff stand ready to answer questions individually or at the table again. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Thayer, any closing comments before we conclude this meeting?
No, not at this time. Thank you very much for your time doing this. The one thing I will say is this legislation is very comprehensive. It encompasses a lot of the governor's goals in doing this, and this is a huge step forward, especially with the federal funding that we have coming forward, that we've been operating one way for 60 years, and we need to streamline and become more efficient and more effective, and the governor's bill and how this merge into this is a step in the right direction. And I do appreciate the committee's time. Thank you.
And Mr. Thayer, I'm assuming the administration is in favor of the RTO?
The concept of the RTO is something we've discussed in the governor's office. But again, I think as anything, as we see the bill as it moves forward, this is the second step in the governor's bill in laying it out. And it is something, the concept is something we have discussed in the past and been supportive of.
Okay. Any further questions by members of the committee for the bill sponsor or his or her chief of staff there? Not? Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. We'll go ahead and set this bill aside. It's a very important bill. Certainly some more hearings will be on it. That concludes our agenda for this afternoon. Tomorrow we'll be hearing Crime Bill HB 66. We'll be delaying this hearing until the Senate floor. We'll announce a time later. The exact time will be determined after the floor. With that, there's nothing going before the committee. Adjourned.